You're listening to WWBC, Cocoa, Merritt Island, Melbourne, Titusville, and the Beaches, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Vieira, 94.7 FM, and W264AS, Melbourne, and Palm Bay, 100.7 FM.
Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Biggie on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7. We are also heard live on the web all over the universe. And this is where Ellen Little comes in handy to give out that address.
Yeah, absolutely. We're on our website. Obviously, all of our shows are on there as well. SitaMediaInc.com and SitaMedia.com. We're also on iTunes under Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And a million other Facebook pages, right?
That's right. Everybody is adding us on their pages, which is really, really terrific. Every week here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, my co-host Ellen Little and myself, we heat up the airwaves by speaking about kitchen table topics and things that are going around here in Brevard and around the nation. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And today we're happy that we have a full studio, yes. Right? We'll be chatting a little bit with our guests. We have Kathy Mayer, who is here. She is a stormwater.
Courtney.
I was looking around.
I actually have the word Courtney written down, but for some reason, I did say Kathy. I have a lot of Kathys in my phone book, like 12.
Okay.
So Courtney Mayer is here, and she is a stormwater engineer for Save Our Lagoon. Welcome to our show.
Thank you.
And we also have Gail Meredith, who is a secretary for Brevard Indian River Coalition. Hello.
Help the lagoon.org.
HelptheLagoon.org.
Little and early plug.
Yes. Why not?
That's great.
What it's all about. And of course, our show today is paid for and sponsored by one of our dear friends who's been with Sita and Friends forever, Lauralee Thompson. She is the owner of Dixie Crossroads.
Co-owner.
You know, I saw that on Facebook. It says owner. And then I thought I should check with her because I knew you always said you had a co-owner.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Your co-owner. So welcome to the show.
Well, thank you.
This
I'm
is
going
to be such
here,
a great show today.
Right.
Really, really good show. I do want to do a quick public service announcement. We have Brevard County's 17th Annual Hispanic Business Expo is going on in Palm Bay. It's going to be March 9th from 12 to 5. And it's a business expo job and health fair. So come connect with businesses that can provide products and services that your company needs. And there are expo booths available. That's for our friends down at the Palm Bay area. Right? See
right.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Friends of yours?
Actually, Sam Lopez's wife had somebody send me that for PSA. And I thought if people are, it's a Hispanic thing you're talking about. Right,
Hispanic Business Expo.
Right. Yeah, they sent that for us, and they just wanted us to just say the date and the time and what's happening. And I thought, why not? They did support, they do support our show, and we have a lot of friends there as well. But before we go on to our show today, we're going to be talking about so many things today. I think Dixie Crossroads, everyone knows, have the best seafood, but there's always a story behind the restaurant, right? And we're going to be talking with Lauralee about all the great things she's doing. I know we wanted to talk about the Burning Festival at one time, but we're not today. We'll have to come back. I read a lot about that this morning as well. But today we're talking about the restaurant and food and what we're doing about the Indian River Lagoon. And Gail is going to jump in when she can as well. But Ellen, before we go to our show, I just wanted, all of us are looking at the news and we're shaking our head in dismay about what is going on with our young people and people who are lying on the news about certain people that have attacked them or trying to discredit others. And I just want to say, at some point, we're all going to have to take a good look at ourselves, look in the mirror and ask ourselves, are we setting a good example for our young people, for people in our homes, people in our community? I was very saddened to see Maryland, Baltimore, where someone had blamed a panhandler for stabbing his wife because she rolled a window down to give him some money.
Right.
And now it comes out that the gentleman actually stabbed his own wife in conjunction with his stepdaughter. And I read that last night, and there were so many comments about this woman's tragic death. And I thought, well, how can you just lie and blame it on a homeless person who wanted a few dollars? And it affected the charitable contributions that people give to the homeless or people have compassion.
It affects the community.
Yeah.
It affects the city. It affects everything. And then not to mention the resources as well of the investigations that, you know, that they're pulling away
this,
from the
yes.
real, the,
yeah.
you know, from the real stuff.
And then we saw, we spoke about before, about the other incidents where the gentleman, the actor in Chicago lied about the two fellas that put the noose and this and that. It's like, come on now, people. I don't think anything is worth lying in such a large scale to where it affects what politicians say, what people who are running for office. I mean, a lot of people jumped in on that case as well and wanted to do something about the homeless and people panhandling. But now you blame somebody for something that a man did himself, and they caught him. He was selling the home and trying to run away to Florida, of all places.
Yeah.
Why Florida?
Why not?
Yeah. So anyway, I'm just saying, at some point, with the few years we have left on this beautiful earthly journey called life, it's up to us, the people that have been there and done that and seen what's going on in our nation with our children, to stand up for the kids. Life experiences trumps everything. No
Absolutely.
Pun intended.
No pun intended.
Right? But at some point, the older heads have to stand up and say, wait a minute. The more you lie, the more you have to cover up with another lie.
That's right.
Why not just be honest and truthful and say, whatever. If you don't want to be married to somebody anymore, blaming a homeless guy and killing your spouse is not the way to go. Get a divorce, for God's sake.
I think Nanny Raj and my mom said this both, that you don't lie because your memory's not that good.
Mm-hmm. That's
You'll never remember what lies you told who.
Well, I think that's why it's good to have a show like Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, because our show is fun. It's unscripted. It's very educational and informative, and we really speak from our heart. We give our audience what's in our heart, which is the goodness instilled in us by our parents and our ancestors and the people that come before us or around us. If you surround yourself by positive thinking people, that's what happens. You become a positive bouncing ball, like you'll probably say about me. But anyway, so let's hear a little bit today. So, Courtney, tell us a little bit about yourself and what is it you do in the stormwater management area here in Brevard County?
So I am a stormwater engineer for the Save Our Lagoon Plan, and my main focus is making sure that all of the stormwater treatment projects go well, and designing and also project management for a lot of even the city's projects that they have and get the funds for.
Yeah, and I was reading this morning about all the great things that the that you all do at the Brevard County Natural Resources, and I was like, I didn't even know they did so many things.
Oh, they do a ton.
Yes, I was really impressed, because originally we were going to have Brandon coming on, and then he got ill, and you're here, so this is wonderful. And Laura Leeson, give us a little bit, a brief history about yourself and why you got so involved in our environmental issues here in Brevard and in Florida as well, and a restaurant.
Well, I'm a fifth generation Floridian, and I grew up living right next to the Indian River Lagoon. My grandfather had a fishing pier, and me and my brothers and sisters played on the pier, and I started commercial fishing when I was only 7 or 8 years old, catching bait shrimp for my grandfather. So I've been on the lagoon in a variety of ways my entire life, from commercial fishing. I started a guided kayak tour business in 1997, so I've been into ecotourism, and then, you know, for my restaurant, our Dixie Crossroads Seafood Restaurant is known for serving local seafood, and we're one of the few restaurants where you can get mullet, and the mullet's coming out of the Indian River Lagoon. So, you know, I've sadly watched the commercial fishing industry in the Indian River Lagoon completely tank during my lifetime, and that's really disturbing. So that's why I got involved. That's why I started the Birding Festival to show that there is an economic benefit to having healthy natural resources, and to see the revival of the commercial fishing industry through helping the lagoon. That's a big goal. And so those are some of my reasons.
And Gail, you're doing a lot to help restore this national treasure, our Indian River Lagoon, right? So tell us a little bit about what you're doing. She's shy.
Well,
we're going to get her to talk.
I'm secretary of the ihelpthelagoon.org, and we're very involved in policy making, going to commissioner meetings, speaking out, and we have a brochure called What You Can Do to Help the Lagoon, which you can get from by being in contact with us from our website. My family came here in 1970, and we live on the water, and I've been passionate about the lagoon ever since, shrimping and all the things that we can do. And seeing the community come together to clean it up has been one of the best things I've ever seen. It's so exciting to see the lagoon getting better.
Yes.
To see the results of the dredging, to see the results of the projects that the county is doing.
And
it's
a half cent sales tax. We all
yes.
voted for that, and we saw all the projects that are underway for that as well.
Yes.
And it does feel good to actually see something that you voted for and see that it's actually being done.
Yes.
You know, I love that. I mean, I like the oversight that we have about the half cent sales tax and what's happening too. So, so Laura Lee, you've been helping us on our show. You've been a sponsor for a long time. One of the things about Dixie Crossroads that all of us like is the delicious food. And we do know that most of that you guys get right here. So tell us a little bit about some of the food that you serve at Dixie Crossroads.
Well, we're mostly known for local shrimp, wild-caught local shrimp. And the difference between real shrimp that come out of the ocean versus shrimp that are grown in ponds and on farms is that the shrimp that come out of the ocean, they have flavor. They have, and each individual species of shrimp has a different flavor profile than the other ones. So during the course of the year at Dixie Crossroads, we'll serve rock shrimp and royal red shrimp. Both of those are deep water shrimp that are caught right off the coast here. Moving inshore towards the beach, you have brown shrimp and hoppers that are caught a little bit closer in than the rock shrimp. And then on the beach, you have white shrimp. And when you see the boats that are dragging real close to the beach during the wintertime, those are white shrimp that they're fishing for. And then we have the mullet, and then we also have, you know, food that people like from other places too. So we have cod, we have Icelandic cod, we have Alaskan crab legs, and so we work really, really hard to source our seafood from the very best places that we can to make sure that it tastes good and people are happy with it.
Yeah, and we've always said on our show when we talk to people from various topics, we are what we eat. And this is why it's so important for people to understand that whatever goes into our lagoon, the muck, the nutrients that's going in there, that's why it's so very important. It's not only about, you know, when we see red tide and people get worried about their eyes, but it's a health issue when our Indian River Lagoon is not up to standard. And I see Gail is shaking her head. That's something that we've all talked about, was the health of the lagoon and how it affects our health as well. And that's one of the big things why you got involved as well.
Yes.
You know, so, and Courtney, and so you're working on the other end of all of this where you're an engineer and you're seeing what's happening with our tax dollars at the Brevard County resource. So tell us a little bit about the Indian River Lagoon restoration projects.
So there are so many different project types we have currently in the plan. There are a few that we focus on more than others, and so a few of those are wastewater treatment facility upgrades. We have septic system removal upgrades, stormwater treatment, muck removal. They do oyster restoration. We're now doing planted shorelines. There's so many different projects covered in this plan.
Right, and you know, I didn't even know that the Save All Lagoon, Indian River Lagoon project had so much citizen oversight.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea, because this morning I went on and I started to read about it. I'm like, wow, how did all this come about to where we had so many citizens I heard there were so many people that wanted to be on the boards that they had to kind of screen people based on their background and stuff. So how did this come about where
and I want to
the
interject,
county
people are excited.
And the citizens all came together and said, this is what we're going to do. And even when I was running for office, this was something that everyone wanted. They were talking about affordable wages and affordable housing and health care. But here in Brevard, the number one issue actually was health care and the Indian River Lagoon. So I'm so grateful that people like Gail and Laura Lee volunteer to, in addition to doing other things, to be on the citizen, to be one of the people that's on the oversight committee in various boards. There's so many, right?
Yeah. And well, I think that, you know, the reason that the Citizens Oversight Committee was put there was to make sure that the tax money, and it's a lot of money, it's almost a half a billion dollars over 10 years, to make sure that that money gets spent the way that the voters intended it to be spent, so that it wouldn't get hijacked and used on other projects. So I'll take Amendment 1, the state land and water conservation vote. You know, that was passed by an overwhelming majority of Floridians who thought that the money was going to be used for land acquisition and for projects to improve Florida's water quality, which we all agree that we need. However, the state legislature has chosen to spend that money in other ways, you know, paying salaries and things like that. So the reason that the Citizens Oversight Committee for the Brevard County Half-Penny Sales Tax was established was to make sure that the plan that everybody voted on is adhered to, and that any changes to the plan that are made are good ones, and that the money is spent the way that the voters intended for it to be spent when they voted for it.
Right. I know when that was one of the things that we talked about a lot on the campaign trail was a misappropriation of funds. Mm-hmm. How many times that came up and people would talk about it. But some of the project types that the citizen Oversight Committee worked are talking about doing. The proposal was like $27 million increase in stormwater projects, a $37 million decrease in muck removal projects, offset by a $21 million increase to provide water treatment and for dredging projects, which I think we really need that. And here's where Courtney's going to talk a little bit about that.
So for muck and dredging. Muck is an organic-rich sediment with high water content, and it's been caused, unfortunately, from decades and decades of accumulated pollutants in the lagoon, and it definitely destroys the seagrass, and it depletes oxygen in the water and in the sediments, and during a flux, it can feed algal blooms. So with that being said, we definitely have to do something about it. We do need to remove it, and it's very important, especially if we want to see more seagrass growing back and to prevent future algal blooms in the lagoon.
And I was wondering, like, you know, everything is, we have so much scientific information now. Certain people are just afraid of science. Why do you think there are some people just don't want to have data on science? I mean, we've seen, like, you know, when we're running for office or when you're talking about the Indian River Lagoon, we had to have so many people to say, well, let's get some scientists involved to tell us. Like from FIT, you had all these people involved in what's going on with the nitrogen and phosphorus. And you still had other people that weren't believing it. You know what I'm saying? And I always wondered, like, why is it we have to push the science on people? It's just a natural thing.
Yeah, I think a big problem is a lot of people in the science field have differing opinions based on different data. And so, you know, we can say one thing, but then someone could have data, you know, when they interpreted a different way. And so that's an ongoing battle that we just try to stay ahead of and think of and make sure we consider when we present information. We know sometimes we will get people who argue against it, and we just have to keep ahead of that.
Yeah, and I guess education plays a big part of that too, because
Oh, absolutely.
You know, when we often do shows and we talk about what's happening with the lagoon, and we talk about the nitrogen and the phosphorus and the muck and the depletion of the grass and all that, and then we started talking about the septic tanks. Mm-hmm. And what leak-in septic tanks do. And we had so many people that sent us information and wanted more information about leak-in septic tanks. And I thought that was good, because all these things came about because science was able to prove this is what's happening. And it does affect what goes on the table what is that saying from the something about with your food on your table?
Yeah.
You have to pay attention to what's on your plate.
That's right.
Otherwise,
and where it came from.
And where it came from, whether it's vegetables or, you know, whether it's things from the ocean, the lagoon, whatever it is, people were not paying attention. And someone wrote us a very nice email and said, you know, I never thought about that, that what goes in has to come out. Mm-hmm. It's true, you know. Yeah. So now we're going to talk a little bit about the tourism money that's been sent on the lagoon restoration as well. And we have a lot of projects about that as well, don't we?
We do. We're using some of the Brevard County tourist tax money that's being collected. So this is a tax that citizens of Brevard County do not pay. It comes from a tax that's levied on the hotel rooms and campgrounds and short-term vacation rentals here in Brevard County. And so we did our first round of applications for grants, and we ended up funding three litter removal, litter maintenance projects along the State Road 528 Causeway and the State Road 520 Causeway. And we, a couple of other projects that I'm really excited about. One of them is, it's done by students at FIT, and they're searching for a new substance that they can use when they're making the oyster mats. Oyster restoration is a huge component of restoration of the Indian River Lagoon. We have to get the filter feeders back into the lagoon, and we have to get the water quality good enough where they can survive, because clams and oysters, barnacles, sea squirts, all of these mussels, all of these organisms, they all filter water. And when there's millions of them in the water, and they have the capacity to filter and clean a lot of water. So the oysters are one of the ways that they're restoring the oysters is they'll take oyster shells and they use a tie wrap, and they're attaching them to plastic grids. And then they tie those plastic grids with these oyster shells on them. They put them on the bottom of the lagoon. And then any free swimming oyster babies that are swimming around in the water will attach themselves to the oysters, and they can actually establish new oyster reefs, or else help restore old oyster reefs using this process. However, plastic is bad for the lagoon. Everybody's heard about microplastics and how bad they are for the environment.
And the straws, we just saw on the news where somebody's going to be introducing a bill to ban straws.
Well, yeah, so straws are plastic. Yeah. So plastics
any
are...
Any single-use plastic, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and so there's some concern that the plastic that's being used on the oyster mats and in the bags of oysters might break down and further add to microplastics in the lagoon. So the BioRock project is looking for another material that they can put the oyster shells on that is more lagoon-friendly, like maybe coconut mat or... So, you know, something that is not as harmful to the lagoon as plastic. And then another project that I'm really excited about is a feasibility study to see whether wave attenuation devices could be a suitable environmental alternative for shoreline stabilization along, we picked the Titusville Causeway for the pilot project. But, you know, we have a big problem with shoreline erosion all over the county, along the causeways, along people's front yards, people that have yards that go to the river. Clearly, the water is coming up in the lagoon every year. It's higher and higher. And so we're losing this very important habitat called beaches along the shoreline of the lagoon. And so people, they fight back by building seawalls or putting rocks in their front yard, and that creates a situation that's detrimental to seagrass growing in front, because when you have a seawall and the waves slam into it, it's kind of like a washing machine effect, and the turbulent water scours the bottom, and seagrass can't grow in front of seawalls. And then you have no beach, so shorebirds have no place to feed, and horseshoe crabs have no place to lay their eggs. So what wave attenuation devices do is they are placed further out in the water. They're like hollow pyramid-shaped structures that help break up the energy of waves. And when you put a line of them in, when the waves hit them, the suspended solids that are in the waves, when the waves lose their power, those suspended solids fall down in the water behind the wave attenuation devices, and they can actually build beaches behind
my,
the car.
She's amazing. I'm learning so much from her.
The other thing is that by knocking the power out of the waves, then seagrass will grow behind them too. And they're hollow, and as soon as you put them in the water, oysters and barnacles and filter feeders start growing on them, so they start pulling nutrients out of the water too. And so rather than dumping concrete rubble along our causeways, which are really, the causeways are the window of recreation for people, you know, to get to the lagoon. So people that can't afford a house that's on the lagoon, or people that can't afford a boat to go out on the lagoon, the causeways are the way that they can get to the lagoon.
Well, they could still enjoy it.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. And when you cover up a causeway with gigantic boulders, you can't launch a kayak from gigantic boulders. You can't get in the water with your kite board when the shoreline's covered with boulders, not to mention that the horseshoe crabs can't spawn there and the seabirds can't spawn there. So the Titusville Causeway is one of the last remaining causeways in Brevard County that still has natural beaches that people can recreate from. So in my opinion, it's very, very important that we find a way to stabilize the shoreline of the Titusville Causeway without putting construction rubble along the shoreline of the causeway.
Well said. It's amazing. I could just see it in front of me as she's talking. I'm just like picturing it. But you know, the Save Our Lagoon project plan outlines so many local projects planned to meet water quality targets and improve our health, productivity, and appeal here along the shorelines. But I'm wondering, like, when people buy houses, should they be giving them like a quick little education if they're going to be living on the river or the water, the shoreline?
That's a great idea.
Because so many people, when we lived in Tortoise Island, we were on the river for 22 years. And I have to be honest, I mean, we bought the house and it was, you know, really wonderful. We lived on the river and this and that. But nobody actually told us about the mangroves, how short you should cut them. We did learn about the oysters from some of our neighbors. And I remember when I moved there, the water was so beautiful and clear. And then over time, the water became black with muck. And we used to see so many dolphins. And then I thought at one point, are the dolphins just dying out? Or where are the dolphins? So, but you had to learn this from your neighbors. You didn't really learn it from the real estate agent. Or they should have like some sort of a class that people who are going to live on the water should appreciate the beauty of nature, not just because it's a nice view, but other things. There's so much that goes into that view. And we saw people would be coming by on their boats and throwing stuff out. So that's another show, another time. The boating people should also have information. And I see, Laura Lee, you're nodding your head. So
well,
what do
actually,
you think about that?
Actually, on the Restore Our Shores, it says there's a general interest for private homeowners. So there's actually a section that you can get some of that information from. But what a great idea that you know, from a responsibility standpoint, that we should really get the real estate agents and the people that are doing, taking care of, selling those homes and getting some education.
Well, you know, people were so concerned about our dock and, you know, our boat and the size of the dock and who's going to be putting in the loose boards and stuff. You get a lot of information about contractors, but no one actually gave you information about the sea, the seafood, you know, the storm water and all that. And that's where I'm going to ask, I think we're just going to hold our ads and go right through because I want to give all the time to Courtney and Gail and Laura Lee. So Courtney, you work with stormwater. Why is it so important to limit and treat the stormwater that goes into the Indian River Lagoon?
So it's a good question. Stormwater is not only a flooding issue, but it also adds many unwanted pollutants and nutrients to the lagoon. Some examples of those are pesticides, oil, grease, debris, litter, sediment, and then of course nitrogen and phosphorus and tons of other things into water bodies. Because of this, it is really important to clean the stormwater as much as possible as we can until it gets to the lagoon. And with that, there's so many different project types to do this. There's pond treatments, you can add baffle boxes, biosorption activated media near outfalls of stormwater ponds, or into water pipes, and that helps absorb the nitrogen. I have a few projects right now. Most of them are using the bioabsorption activated media, which we consider BAM, and we have those near the outfalls of ponds, so the water will get treatments in existing ponds, and then they'll flow through this media, and it'll get even more treatment for the nitrogen and sometimes phosphorus. And I also have another project right now that is going to be a large stormwater pond off of Wickham that's going to help treat a lot of the runoff there and potentially a treatment train.
Yeah. We had a show recently, and we talked a little bit about the rain barrels, and we talked about the biosolids. And those are always great shows because people learn. I mean, a lot of people didn't even know the importance of the rain barrels. And after our show, we had so many people that says, wow, I had no idea. Do you want to talk a little bit about the rain barrels? Do you know enough to talk about?
Yeah, we do rain barrel workshops, especially for certain projects. We will host those. And I mean, reusing the rainwater can come and help so many ways. For example, I have an aunt. She has a large garden in her backyard, and she has tons of rain barrels. And she uses that alone to water all of her garden. So not only does she collect this storm water instead of it going into the swales and going into the lagoon, but she also is able to use it to save money and to help with her plants growing. So rain barrels are a great idea. And then there's always workshops going on. I know MRC has a lot of them. And you can go and you can pick up a rain barrel and you can use it yourself at home.
Yeah, I mean, you remember we had
the marine. I remember yours.
Yeah.
And the painting party. Yes. You've got a pretty one.
Ooh. Well, you know. Well, you know.
Christina's got a nice one.
The thing is, I think when you're young and, you know, you're in your teens and then you got married and you have children and you're working and you have to pay car payment and insurance and mortgages and whatever, no one is actually thinking about stormwater and septic tank and rain barrels and nitrogen and phosphorus. We're thinking about raising our children and college and school. But as you get older and you start loving nature more than you were born into it, you start paying attention. And when you pay attention, great things happen because you educate yourself and those around you that you love. And that's why, you know, we started talking about nature and the rain barrels and what's going on with a lagoon. And then, lo and behold, we found so many people in Brevard County that thinks the same way, that wants to preserve nature and leave a footprint for our grandchildren that's better than the way we found it. And that's something that Gail and I always talk about. This is why you got involved as well, didn't you?
Yes.
Because you wanted to leave the earth better than the way we found it.
Yes.
And I wonder, I often wonder why more people are not seeking that knowledge, the information like we are. So what else can we do, Laura Lee, to get more people involved? That it's not only about us and the restaurant or what we're serving, but it's actually a health issue and an issue, how are we going to leave this world better than we found it for our kids and our grandchildren? And I see it all the time. We'll talk to people on the show and they'll be like, oh my God, I had no idea. So, and now this is where you come in handy, Courtney, because you can talk to us a little bit about muck. A lot of people hear about muck, but they don't actually know what it is. They just call it something slimy in the bottom of the river, right? But there's more to muck than just being slimy. There's a reason why, how it got there, and how it got there and why it's not good for the river and the environment, and what are we going to do about it? Anybody who wants to take this question, because everybody knows what muck is. We just can't explain it the way Laura Lee can.
Well, when I was little, I used to think muck was pretty cool, you know, because you could walk around in it. And it was like walking around in black mayonnaise, and it would squish up in between my toes, and it felt really weird. And you could, even back then, and I grew up in the 50s and the 60s, you could walk around on a nice sandbar that had nice shelly bottom and seagrass growing on it. And you could kind of walk off the edge of that sandbar and get down into a deeper area, and the muck would be there, and no seagrass would be growing in it. There would be no crabs, no nothing. I didn't understand what was going on then, but what I was seeing as a child is the same thing that's happening in the river now. The muck seeks deeper areas. And so an example of what's going on in Mosquito Lagoon right now, the seagrass is growing. It's coming back pretty strong on the west side of the Mosquito Lagoon, north of Hallover Canal, because if there's a protected area, there's a line of spoil islands that goes north from Hallover Canal. And in between those spoil islands and the western side of Mosquito Lagoon, It's a carpet of seagrass that grew back last summer. It was beautiful. But out in the middle of the Mosquito Lagoon, there's a series of sandbars and little channels that are in between the sandbars. And the seagrass has not come back on those open sandbars out in the middle of Mosquito Lagoon, because every time the wind blows, it stirs up the muck that's laying in between the channels, in between the sandbars. And so until we can get that muck out of the lagoon so that it won't keep getting stirred up every time the wind blows and shifting around, it's going to be very, very hard to get the seagrass to come back, because seagrass won't grow in muck.
And so, Connie, how is the muck actually formed?
Well, the muck is, it's a sediment. It's an organic rich sediment with lots of water in it. And it's just formed from years and years and years of pollution. I mean, it is what they call legacy loads. It's from years of sewage being dumped into the lagoon. Because up until, you know, 10 plus years ago, they were doing it almost daily until a bill was formed. So there's so much
only pollution. Sewage or other things?
All kinds of things.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Just tons of nutrients and tons of pollution in the lagoon, and just sitting at the bottom and just forming, and you know, and we're, if we don't get it out, it's not going to go anywhere. It doesn't eat itself up, and it's not good for anything sitting in the lagoon. So we have to do something to remove it, or else it will just always be there, and there's no potential for seagrass growth if it's
right
there.
And you know, and I'm grateful that so many of our politicians in Brevard take now this is a priority for them, and I'm grateful that some of them are doing it. Yeah, we pull our hair out when they don't, but I see, you know, Randy Fine talks about it and other people, and I'm like, okay, great, let's see what else is going to happen. But here's the thing, why did it take so long? It's like, why? It's almost like the citizens have to pull every single hair out of their head before it's addressed on a, such a large scale. And that is what I don't understand. Because, you know, it didn't happen overnight. It took years for the lagoon to become dirty, polluted, and all that muck to be in there.
Well, and you and I have talked about this before. I remember when I first moved here in the 80s, there was a thriving business of oyster and clammers and everybody. And you would go, you would leave, I would leave the house anyway at 5 o'clock in the morning, and I would see the silhouette of boats that were, and there were clammers and oyster fishermen that were fishermen. I don't know if they called fishermen an oyster, but clammers mm-hmm. that would be out and getting the clams, you know, using the old manual way with the rakes and so forth. And then all of a sudden it was like early 90s, everybody packed up and moved back to Long Island.
Yeah,
there was nothing here, because
we over harvested the clams. There's no question about that.
And I think that it seems like that was the start of it, because mm-hmm. then, you know, I was seeing this beautiful lagoon that I was passing by every day on the way to work, and it slowly got browner
yes.
and browner and browner. And then to the point that I, you know, I love to kayak as well, and went kayaking out by that water star or something like that marina that's right there on US 1 in Harbor City. And went kayaking out there and got off the kayak just to rinse off a little bit, and went up to my knees in that black mayonnaise. And I was like, oh, well, this is kind of gross.
I can't swim, so.
Yeah, you can't swim.
I've always been very careful. Yeah. Even when I lived under river, people would say, oh, do you jump in? No, not really, because I can't swim. But I saw people coming out of there with muck, my son.
Well, and the nice thing is, too, is that I have a lot of friends. I was looking up on the Restore Our Shores website, and I had a few friends that had said that they had bought oyster beds, or that they were now oyster farmers, and how excited they were.
Parents of oysters.
Right, and I didn't know that if you're a Brevard County resident with a dock along the Indian River Lagoon, you can sign up to be an oyster gardener and help Brevard Zoo Restore Our Shore program.
Right, well, that's one of the things.
I mean, that's just one thing.
Well, that's one thing when you purchase a home on the river. They
right,
should be telling you about,
before,
right?
Yeah.
But, you know, the thing is, the ecosystem response, it's lagging behind, right? And it's going to take years for all this to be completed. So what's the estimated time for all this to be done? 10 years? To clean the muck? To get everything healthy again?
I would say longer than that. We can look at other bodies of water for examples. You've got Tampa, you've got Chesapeake Bay. There's tons of other restoration projects, and they're still ongoing. You know, we will see progress in how long. I don't think anybody knows exactly, but it is going to take patience, and it's going to take time. And a big thing is it's going to take the community changing. We as people have to change how we live our lives for the lagoon to get any better also.
Right. Yeah. I know we always see the truck that goes by. It says, recycle, right? Mm-hmm. But how many people actually take the time, not just to put the stuff in the recyclable bin, but to teach their children about single use of plastics, nutrients that goes into the river and why it's important, not just to put it in the bin, but why it's important to recycle.
And
but they don't. And it is true. It's education. It always comes down to everyone doing that.
Yep. And I grew up locally in the 90s here and went to elementary school, high school, middle school, everything here in Titusville, actually. And I never was educated on how to, you know, live lagoon friendly. But I will say, I just recently went to my aunt's classroom with our outreach person in the Brevard County Natural Resources Department, and he taught a bunch of classes there at Surfside Elementary on how to live lagoon friendly. So it's definitely starting to happen. It's getting out there more. We have education implemented in the plan. We've got tons of other organizations that are helping with that. So hopefully that will change when educating, you know, the younger kids who will then grow up to live on the lagoon.
Yeah, so the recovery process is going to be a while.
Yes.
But I think we could stop all of this in its tracks if we educate this generation coming up and teach them, you know, what we weren't taught, which is how to respect Mother Nature, how to respect all our bodies of water, our beaches, our shorelines, because there won't be anything left for the next generation. So now there are so many things going on with the shorelines, and one of the questions we had the last time Laura Lee was here, people wanted to know exactly what is a living shoreline. And I think we could explain, if you would like to tell us a little bit again, what is a living shoreline?
Sure. I kind of touched on it when I was talking about the Titusville Causeway.
Yes, yes.
But a living shoreline is one that it's like a natural shoreline. It's not, it doesn't have a seawall on it or a big pile of rocks. It's more, it's like a natural slope. It goes down to the water, and then you have a beach, and then you might have some mangroves and some of the different native grasses that grow along the lagoon. But it provides this transition area between the open waters of the lagoon and the upland habitat. And it's critical for the survival of shorebirds and horseshoe crabs and wading birds and, you know, all of this fabulous wildlife that we're so fortunate to have here in Brevard County. If we allow the shorelines of the Indian River Lagoon to eventually become all hardened shoreline, we're going to lose a lot of that wildlife because they don't hang around where they can't find food. So you mentioned that you saw the dolphins disappearing from in front of your house. They're not going to go where they can't eat. They're like me. I love to eat.
I was just going to say, all of us, we love to eat.
Those animals are not going to hang around where they can't eat. And so it's critical that as a part of the plan that we also restore the shoreline. So I'll take Titusville, for example, and we're doing a lot of living shoreline projects in Titusville, but University of Central Florida students did a survey, and they determined that 70% of the shoreline in Titusville is hard armored now. It either has seawalls or construction debris or riprap or rocks or, you know, some kind of stuff that people put along the shoreline to try to keep the waves from chewing up their yards. But there's been some projects now. The University of Central Florida has done some living shoreline stabilization projects on some archaeological Indian mounds in the Canaveral National Seashore at Castle Windy and at Turtle Mound. And you can see the Turtle Mound project really easily. And what was happening is the waves, erosion, was eating up the sides of these Indian mounds, and the sides were caving in. And so they came in, and they even built a wall along the Turtle Mound to try to stop the deterioration, and that concrete wall still didn't help. So they came in, and they put oyster bags along the shoreline and oyster mats. They planted mangroves. They planted thousands of grasses. And those shoreline stabilization projects have proved to be a better way to preserve the shoreline than putting piles of rocks and seawalls, and they've been through several hurricanes now, and the shoreline is still there.
It just keeps up. Well, you know, that's what I mean. A lot of countries, that's what they do. They don't put the rocks. They don't. I mean, it's not only about beautification, but it's about the living shoreline as well and the natural beauty of it all. I mean, you think about Indonesia and places in Africa and New Zealand India and all these places. And we don't have they don't have the issues they have with their shorelines or their bodies of water like we do. And we are the richest country in the world, I think. We should come up with some ideas and listen to the experts that are telling us to preserve the shorelines. These are some of the things to consider.
Yeah, it just hasn't been a priority for us as a community until we started having the big fish kills and the big algae blooms. And unfortunately, you know, those were not only were they a tipping point for the health of the lagoon, but they were also a wake-up call to our community as a whole that the lagoon's in trouble and it needs our help and it needs major behavioral changes on our part if we're going to keep the lagoon healthy and a viable part of our community.
Well, for our listeners who are tuning in to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends today, we're speaking with Lorelei Thompson, who is one of the co-owners of Dixie Crossroads. Ellen Little, my co-host, is here as usual. And we have Courtney Mayer, who's here, and she works in the Stormwater Management in the Brevard County Natural Resources Management Office. And our friend Gail Meredith is here as well, and she's waving at me. And so Courtney, I looked up the Brevard County Natural Resource Management Facebook page.
Yes.
And I think I had liked it a long time ago, but there's a lot of projects that you guys are doing. You're young, and you have so many people that in our county that, you know, like Lorelei said, did not pay attention to what's happening. What is the divide between the younger generation and the older generation? Why is it now it's so important, but for years people just didn't pay attention? Did it have to take so many fishes that were dead coming up on shore, or did it have to be the red eye that started affecting people's health? What was it, in your opinion, that happened that people say, we've got to look at the Indian River Lagoon?
That's a good question. I think it's probably a mixture of things. I think it's a lot of just time going by and this just getting worse and worse. It's finally got to a point where we can't keep letting it go. I also think it could be that restoration projects are happening other places and we're finally catching on to success stories we see in other bodies of water. That helps too. I think it's a lot of things. I think the biggest thing, though, is we now realize it's a lot of stuff we've done and we have to change it. And also, a big problem is we're just going to keep building and building and building here. And the more we do that, we have to counteract it somehow in any way possible. So these nutrients that we are adding along with the people we are adding don't keep just pouring into the lagoon. We have to stop that.
That's why that Wawa freaked me out.
Right.
Because it was right there on 192, right there on the corner, really close to US-1. And basically, that's like a berm, isn't it? I mean, isn't that like kind of a... And that all of that runoff there from that gas station, it seemed like that would have been more damage, right?
Well, that's where the developers need to pay their fair share as well when they're developing lands, and especially the ones who are building right on the beaches, you know, because yes, X amount of people are going to move to Brevard because it's a hidden gem. Brevard County is so beautiful, but they're coming, whether it's engineering jobs, each engineer, nothing against engineers, but we have a lot that moves here and they're all going to have a home. They're all going to have, you know, families. And then you look into the overload of the sewers, you look at, you know, schools, the roads, the infrastructure. In order to keep up with the pace of people wanting to come to this beautiful Brevard County, Florida, yes, everybody has to pay their fair share. And I do think the developers have to pay attention to where they're building, have proper plans. And this is where the Citizens Oversight Committee comes in really handy, because people are getting they're becoming more active in all the city commission. People are attending the meetings, they're attending the school boards. People are just fed up. And I think the lagoon started it all. Everyone now have become an activist, and everybody have a group and they belong to a group. And it's good. I think it's good for us that so many of the citizens are involved.
So I also like this Adopt a Mangrove program. And I see that there's a program actually coming up on Wednesday, March 13th. It's free to the public, but the reservations are required. And they're having a talk, and then they're going to be followed by a mangrove potting and a tour of the Indian River Lagoon tank. So, I mean, that if you're interested, if you're just getting started, that might be a great place
to get an education. So, Courtney, is there a website that people can go to learn about Save Our Indian River Lagoon?
Yes, on Brevard County's webpage, there is a Save Our Lagoon page. It is www.brevardflorida.gov/SaveOurLagoon. And on that page, you can see information on the Citizen Oversight Committee, along with the plan and all of its updates. There's a dashboard with graphics of our progress. There's contact information, videos of projects and meetings. There's quite a bit. We're still working on it. We're going to have more maps on there soon, but, you know, it's progress.
Yeah. I like what you guys are doing. Your projects, you guys are taking advantage of so much information from so many people, and you're looking for ways that are least cost-effective for the projects as well, which mm-hmm. I think that's really good for the citizens who voted for that half-cent sales tax as well. That you're not just giving the contract to just the highest bidder. They're paying attention to what's happening, and that's good. And there's a website as well for where you work, for the stormwater management, Brevard County Natural Resources Management. That's a mouthful. So give us the website for that as well, because there are so many links to so many things from here to Tallahassee to the Chesapeake Bay, everywhere. Anybody who wants to learn about the natural environment and what they can be doing, not just for Florida, but all over the United States, you can go on that website and learn so much.
Yeah, and that one, hold on, I'm finding it right now.
Well, it's a mouthful, but yeah. I think if you just, what I did was I Googled Brevard County Natural Resources Department, and I just plugged in lagoon projects being considered with half penny sales tax, and so many things came up. I was like, gee, we don't have enough time to talk about all of this, but it was really good. Laurelee, you've been volunteering as a citizen scientist for the FWC on a horseshoe crab study. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, I'm really excited to be involved in that.
And what does the FWC stand for?
That's the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission.
She's involved in so many things, I can't keep up.
But the horseshoe crab survey, they've been doing that for a couple of years over on the West Coast in Tampa Bay and Sarasota Bay. And this is the first time that they've initiated one over here on the East Coast. And they picked two places in Brevard County, Kelly Park on Merritt Island, and then the Titusville Causeway. And I think probably that's because I've been talking so much about the thousands of horseshoe crabs that nest on the Titusville Causeway. In fact, the day before Thanksgiving, a couple weeks ago, I counted 8,436 horseshoe crabs that were nesting on the southeast side of the Titusville
Causeway. You literally counted them yourself?
I counted every single crab.
Wow.
Well, actually, I made my little brother do it because I have a broken leg. So I'm not getting around too well right now. So I hobbled along with him and made a mark every time he counted 50 crabs.
You evidently have a lot of fun doing this because you're a very positive gal.
Yeah, well, you know, this is something that I've been wanting for a long time, and now it's happening, and it was unfortunate that I broke my leg right before. Well, actually, I volunteered for it. My mom's like, why are you doing this? But I volunteered for it before I broke my leg, so I couldn't really go back.
Yeah, yeah.
So I've dealt with it.
He's a trooper.
I figured out how to get around it, and Tom's been helping out. But there's horseshoe crabs are like the most ancient animal on Earth. They've been here since before the dinosaurs, and we're losing them in our lifetime. And so what are we doing that's wrong, that's getting rid of an animal that's been here for like 600 million years?
I know Ellen's Googling a horseshoe crab right now as we speak. Yep. I know, right. How she
and
operates.
They're incredibly important for medical research. So, you know, it's in our own best interest to help them survive. So that's been a lot of fun.
Horseshoe crab study. I never heard. Yeah. That's very interesting.
Well, and yeah. I remember horseshoe crabs as a kid and how much fun. I mean, we used to have fun with them.
You know,
we'd have little horseshoe crab races and, you know, then put them back.
So we have,
and if you see one, it's really important. If you see horseshoe crabs spawning, you know, there's usually going to be like a big horseshoe crab with a little one attached to it. Mm-hmm. The big one is the female. The little one's the male. If you see that,
the big one
the
is a female,
uh-huh.
and the
yeah.
little one is
uh-huh.
a male.
Yeah.
Oh goodness!
Yeah, and you can report that. You can go to the myfwc.com, and you can report when you see a nesting horseshoe crab. Go to the horseshoe crab section of the website and report it, because they're trying to collect data.
Right. Oh wow.
Very cool.
So we have 4 minutes left, and I think we're going to use the remaining 4 minutes. What a nice show today! It's so relaxed and very unscripted, very fun. We even heard about Laurelee's leg.
That's
which
right.
is great. That's why Viewpoint with Sita and Friends is so much fun. It means, actually, there's a story to that. Even if you sign up to do something and volunteer, where there's a will, there's a way. That's what that's all about. So everyone wants to do their part to help the lagoon. And we'll start off with Courtney Mayer. Courtney, give us a few suggestions. Each of us have a minute. Tell us some of the things that you suggest that us humans on this planet can do to help our lagoon.
Well, since I'm speaking for the Save Our Lagoon plan, I will keep it plan specific. We do have four parts of education that we focus on. One of them is minimize fertilizer, and when you do use it responsibly. Septic system maintenance is another big one. Excess irrigation, watch how much you're irrigating and try not to over-irrigate. And then stormwater pond maintenance is a priority also, making sure if you live on a stormwater pond or have an HOA that takes care of it, that you take care of them responsibly.
It's simple things. And what about you, Gail Meredith? You got anything to add to how we could take in Mother Earth?
Well, grow native plants. Get rid of your St. Augustine grass. They know that the muck is caused by the clay on the back of sod. A lot of it, 60% of the dried out muck is caused by clay. We don't have clay in our soils, so they know it comes from the back of muck. Get rid of your St. Augustine and plant native plants and tune into nature.
All right. And Ellen, you got anything to add to that really quick? We got 2 minutes.
If you own a dock, make sure that you get in touch with Brevard Zoo and get on the oyster plan.
Right. And I would say pay attention to how many plastics you use at home.
Amen.
And like me, now, you know, it's better to invest in paying somebody to help you at a party at your home. Let them help you wash those dishes or load up the dishwashers. Or instead of using plastic for every single thing.
Right.
Because that adds to it. And also, for what we do at home, we turn off our lights. We do pay attention to the grass, rainwater barrels. What about you, Laura Lee? We have a minute left.
Volunteer. There's all kinds of ways you can volunteer. And they do fun projects and the whole family can get involved. So starting from the north in Volusia County, you can volunteer at the Marine Discovery Center. Here in Brevard, you've got the Brevard Zoo, the Brevard Indian River Lagoon Coalition, and the Marine Resources Council. When you go down to the Treasure Coast, you've got Harbor Branch in Fort Pierce and the Florida Oceanographic Society in Martin County. And then we also have the Indian River Lagoon National Estuary Program that you can look that up too. And so all of these worthy organizations have all kinds of opportunities for you to volunteer and your kids to volunteer and talk about what you can do to help the lagoon.
Right, and we don't want to hear people say, I'm bored and I'm depressed. There's a lot of stuff going on that can help you to fight your boredom. You can go there and volunteer and meet like-minded people and do something great for your community and feel good about yourself as well. And with that, Ellen, I'll say also FIT has a lot of great programs.
Yes.
So anything you want to know, that's why Google was that's why we have Google. That's why God gave man the brain to have Google. Just Google the names.
I thought you were going
to
say that's
that
why
want.
God gave us Google.
Well,
I was going to say
that's why he gave me Mark Zuckerberg because I love Facebook.
But go ahead,
take it away.
Well, we have had a wonderful show today, and thank you all so much. If you are looking for any of these resources, I've put them all on our Facebook page right underneath the post from today's show. And please visit Dixie Crossroads if you haven't been out there as a restaurant. You're going to love the food. You're going to love the service. And, of course, get involved in your community. And we'll see you next week here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.